Welcome to Baldly Go, the officially unofficial podcast for all of Star Trek. This week we're doing our season 2 wrap-up for Star Trek Strange New Worlds. Hey Ron, I know we have a bunch of feedback. I know we have some thoughts that we want to talk about first, though. Our feelings on the season overall, maybe hopes and dreams for Star Trek of the future. How are you feeling after season 2?
Plans for what we're going to do with this feed, potentially. How am I feeling about Star Trek Strange New Worlds? I think Star Trek Strange New Worlds this season 2 was a confident step forward for an already confident first foray into Star Trek. Like, I think this is the best Star Trek I've seen since late the Deep Space Nine. I can't believe how good it looks. I can't believe how much, like, how deep into the lore of Star Trek that the writers delve into confidently. It wasn't perfect. Like, in fact, it's a kind of a bummer. I think the finale episode is one of the weaker episodes. Now, it's also part one of a cohesive whole, but I think I like season 2 even better than season 1. What did you think about season 2?
Yeah, I think I'm there with you. It might be recency bias, and I remember these episodes a lot stronger because I've seen them sooner or more recently. But, like, I find myself thinking back on this season and going, man, that was a good episode. Oh, that was a good episode, too. Oh, the episode where nobody had a memory past a day, that was cool. Spock turning human, that was cool. Yeah, I just had a lot of fun with this season. Lon and Kirk having their episode, that was a lot of fun. I don't know, man. I think they really did a good job on season 2, and I'm kind of surprised to say it, but I think it's even better than season 1.
Yeah, I mean, we got feedback saying that Under the Cloak of War might be among the best episodes of Star Trek ever, and it's like, the fact that I don't think anyone could deny it belongs in the top 10.
Which one is this, Under the Cloak of War?
That's the one with the Mbinga, the ghost backstory.
That's a great episode.
Like, it's, I think a lot of this season, I was, like, very wary. I'm like, am I pro Strange New Worlds because I want Star Trek to succeed? That's my bias. Like, I've been pretty open about that. Like, I I've pretty demonstrated that I can shit on modern Star Trek with the best of them when it sucks. Some of the stuff in the first two seasons of Picard. But now, when I look around, I look at a fandom that's kind of united in thinking this show is great to excellent.
I have complicated feeling with Star Trek because I love it as a franchise, and I like probably 60 or more percent of everything I've seen in Star Trek, right? But, like, I don't know how to judge it because it always feels like, am I being too kind to this show? But I don't think so. Have they lowered the bar so far in the past decade with Star Trek, or more, two decades, honestly, that I no longer feel like they have to hit a very high bar to impress me? Or is this actually good TV?
TV. I definitely, the floor for bad Trek is lower than I've ever seen it be in the last 10 years. But also, like, if we're being honest, I think we've raised the bar in the old series quite a bit. Like, they're good. I definitely am not going to, you're not going to come here, this is the wrong shop to come preaching the Next Generation hate, okay?
Sure.
But the first two seasons of that show are mostly cover your eyes bad.
Oh, we know. We talk about it all the time, right?
And there would be a good 10 to 15% of episodes per season, the good 2-3 that would be stinkers even in its glory runs of season 3, 4, and 5. And then I think it got more kind of 50-50. In the later seasons. So it's like, I think it's a little bit, it's like you got rose-colored glasses looking at the old stuff. Judging the new stuff up against the best, the golden age of television.
Yep.
And then out comes Strange New Worlds, which is just, you know. And if you'd have told me, like, at the beginning of the season, okay, here's the deal. Jim Kirk is going to be on the Enterprise 6 episodes of this season. You're going to have another lovesick Spock episode, except for he's going to turn into a human. There's going to be a 100% musical episode. I'd be like, oh, Jesus, this sounds like this show has complete. How the hell are you forcing this much Kirk? But now that I've seen it, it's like, it just all worked. Like, I don't know if it's, it works because I want Kirk to be on the Enterprise so bad that I'm looking over why, especially the first officer now would be gone from his ship so much. But like, as long as they can keep saying, Sam Kirk, or Lon, time wrinkle. I just want it to work so much that the show is working.
Yeah.
Or is it just working?
No, I think it's just working. I think it's just good.
Favorite episode of the season?
Oh, boy. It might be that memory episode, where they go down to the planet and they lose their memories. That might be the name. I'm terrible with titles of episodes, but
yeah,
I like that episode a lot. I thought the mechanic was super interesting. I don't know. It felt very Star Trek to me.
Yeah, that's like that, thirds rule I came up with in the last episode, where it's like you got to have at least a third of it being solid science fiction. No, that was Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow. Or no, is that as Among the Lotus Eaters. Tomorrow, Tomorrow, Tomorrow,
yes,
Tomorrow was
the Lotus
Kirk episode.
Mm-hmm. God, that one was good too.
Yeah.
There's honestly, the wonky car chase, but other than that.
Yeah. What are you going to do? What are you going to do in Ontario?
Yeah, how about you? Got a favorite? Is it the musical episode? Because that's my
least
favorite by
far. Because I've watched that like two or three more times since we did the podcast on it. I showed it to a friend of mine. Right. I've been listening to some of the singles. Like, yeah, I just, yeah. And I like it more and more the more I watch it. But I'm not going to tell you that's the best episode. I think the best episode is clearly Under the Cloak of War.
I think that's pretty easy to say.
Yeah. I'm surprised how much I like The Old Scientist, though. I did not know this. I saw this on TikTok last night that Jack Quaid did that Riker. That was like an impromptu thing that he just did because he's like, I was thinking about the scene. I get there. Jonathan Frakes is behind the camera.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I got to just do it. And Jonathan Frakes, he was in the room when they were telling the story. He says, my wife, who was on set, screamed. Just said this like on the first take because it's just so funny. And no one knew it was coming. So it's like, I'm surprised how much I like that episode, even though I have essentially zero affection for the Lower Decks.
Yeah, it might have been the juxtaposition of the silliness of Lower Decks that I think you're not into versus this crew. Them being sort of the straight men to Boimler.
Right. And they're a good deal sillier than even the silliest, I think, Star Trek crew.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like,
for sure.
That's one of the, one of the thirds of that strategy is like, these kind of like zany swing for the fences, risk taking episodes like the musical. And like, I don't like, they definitely did that once a season. Like they'd have Q come by and you get Picard, in Robin Hood tights doing stage fencing. But like, it wasn't as frequently, I think, as the fun they're having in this show. And I think
Agreed.
That's good.
Yeah.
All right. I want to talk because, like, there's lots of hopes and dreams that our fans have that have written in Star Trek at boldmove.com. I want to talk about maybe some things we're looking forward to. And I'll start things off. I really do hope they keep this. It's obviously an informal, but it's a rule of thirds where you have one third of Star Trek is mind-bending, thoughtful, cutting-edge science fiction. You got one third sturdy character pieces to spotlight individual members of the crew because they're all so fantastic. And one third these silly swing for defense experiments. Like, it's fucking time for a Mirror Universe episode. I want to see a Mirror Universe episode with this crew so bad. And it's been so long since Star Trek has been fun enough to do one that I got Mirror Pike. What the fuck does Mirror Pike look like?
I don't know, but I want to see it.
Mirror Laan? Anson
Mount can do it, I guarantee.
We've seen Mirror Spock before in episodes, but like, I'm just really curious to see how and that's the stuff that they can do.
What mechanism do you want it to take? Because like, you could do just the straight up like DS9, TOS Mirror Universe kind of stuff, right?
Or
you can
do
the Thomas Riker transporter accident stuff. You can do some kind of space anomaly, right? Send them through.
Nah,
and
I gotta see Mirror Universe. I want to see the sexy crew slinking around in eye patches and leather bustiers, and Laan probably have a whip.
Yeah, Yep. For sure.
What about you? I got another one.
What does Carol Kane look like in a mirror universe?
I didn't want to trigger you. I was like, what does Dark Pelia look like?
Might like her more. I might like her more.
Yeah.
Yeah. At least would fit.
She's vicious. Just feeding crew members to the engine.
Yeah. The Warhammer-esque mm-hmm. Pelia. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good one. I like that a lot. I'm really hoping they have a good run with this Gorn stuff, because I think the Gorn are super cool. And if we can get, like, maybe not a full-on war, although it seems like that may be where they're going, at least, it like, a few good skirmishes, right?
Yeah, agreed.
I want to know more about them, too. Like, the Gorn that they've fashioned here seem really interesting in a way that the Gorn in the original series are not.
There's a killer idea to connect those in feedback.
Okay,
so
perfect.
Stay tuned for that. If you're the type that usually skips the feedback, there's some solid Gornification, unification of the Gorn of the Gorn. You know, yeah, I'm pretty excited about that.
Is it the Gorniverse where everybody, all the crew is Gorn?
No, I don't want to spoil it. Okay. I don't spoil it. It got me excited for the next season.
All right.
Another thing that's something you probably can guess from the bitching I've done this season, I kind of think they need to tighten up the science part of the science fiction here. If you want us to be there for when subspace riffs are making everyone sing and dance, you got to kind of sweat the shit that we figured out in the early 20th century. Like, I thought that used to be the hallmark of old Star Trek, is that they would have cutting edge popular science concepts, mm-hmm. like quantum mechanics and gravitational waves. And, you know, they would be pretty straight with that. But then you'd also have the subspace hyperspan, or, you know, all that stuff to go on to it. And you need a kind of a hard, crunchy science crust to put all the pie filling of the crazy trectobabble bullshit, or it just doesn't work. And I think they fucked that balance up in like later seasons of Voyager, and they never quite got it back. And I think that's one of the flaws of this show, is that they are rigorous to the Trek of it, but they're not as much rigorous as to the Star part of it.
Room temperature superconductor episode. Let's go.
LK99, baby. Mm-hmm. I want to see Pelia fucking with that next season. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Yeah, I like that. And maybe tighten up the writing around some of this stuff. Like, you know, crash, at least have the crew concerned that they're crashing a gigantic gigantic saucer section down onto the area of the planet where their crew might be.
Mm-hmm. So that might still have living crew aboard it too. It's another thing
that might also
point it out.
Right. So considering they found living crew on it. Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh.
There's still pockets of oxygen. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe sweat those smaller details too.
Here's one other hope. Could we do a longer season? Could we maybe get 12, 13 episodes of Trek?
Don't press your luck, man. I've seen longer seasons of Trek and there's a lot of filler.
True. Maybe that's the secret sauce. I think they could do 12. I think they could do 12. But also, I want them to turn it around. I don't want this to take three plus years. So,
well, I mean, it's probably inevitable at this point with the strike and all.
Probably. I mean, it's a shame, too, because they really got the hustle going for season two. Like, they got that turned around in about a year.
Yeah, I feel like they had a pipeline
brisk
for Trek, right? Like, they had a Marvel-esque kind of schedule.
We got a continuity of like showrunners and writers, and I don't know why it's working so well for Strange New Worlds when it wasn't working so well for Picard and Disco, but
yeah,
it is working. So,
I don't know. The strike's gonna fuck all that up, and you know that's the intention, right? Make it hard for them.
Yeah, make it hard for the studios to make money so that they'll share some with the writers and the actors. Mm-hmm. What else? Do you have any other?
No, I think that's about it. I'm open to whatever they want to try, but we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. Well, we got a lot of feedback. We got a lot of people sharing their hopes and thoughts and fears, their ideas about the final few episodes. If you'd like to send us feedback, StarTrek@baldmove.com. One brief mention, speaking of the strike, it's likely it's a strike continues, and there doesn't seem to be any budging of the production side of things. We're probably going to run out of fresh television to talk, and we've talked about some things we could go and revisit, you know, like what are some things we can do to produce content if the content just kind of stops. And we got the Star Trek feed, and one of the leading things that we're interested in is maybe doing a rewatch of the old series. I think we got, rightfully, we took some flack for not knowing some of the finer points of the old series. I've seen it. I know Jim hasn't seen it all. It's been 30 years since I've seen it. I don't want to make any promises. I don't want to talk about timelines, but just like if you are thinking about unsubscribing to the feed until next Strange New Worlds, maybe keep up and see if we're doing something by Christmas. Because, we got some fun plans for the all of Star Trek part of the promise of this feed that we haven't come across. So, yeah, we'll definitely be back for season 3.
Yeah.
Like, whenever. I can almost guarantee we'd be back for season 3. Isn't Lower Decks starting pretty soon?
Lower Decks, I think, does have a season 4 dropping sometime. I think it's already produced, so I don't think the strike is going to affect it.
Did they go ahead and shit can Star Trek? Was it Prodigy? Was it the one that they're like, there's like a show about Starfleet?
I think so. It's the kids show. Yeah, the animated series.
Yeah. But we're definitely keeping our eye on Trek in this feed. So if there's significant Trek news, or like I said, if the strike it continues to strangle the content side of things, then I wouldn't be surprised if we're back with another Star Trek series we're considering. But again, no promises on the when that would be. If before we get to feedback, if you want to keep up with what we're doing, the best way to do that is follow us on your choice of social media at Bald Move, except for TikTok, it's at Baldest Move. And if you really liked our series, I can encourage you to join our club where you can get even more inside access at support.baldmove.com.
Set phasers to add. We'll be right back. We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Here are the weekly highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
Apple TV is releasing a new series based on Blake Crouch's novel Dark Matter. Aaron and I are big fans of his work, so we're picking up the new show on day one. Join us this Wednesday for the preview podcast.
The Shogun Limited series might be over, but that doesn't mean our Shogun coverage has to end. We've got the wrap-up podcast releasing this Tuesday, where we'll consider all your feedback and final thoughts on the series. And because we like the show so much, we decided to go all the way back to 1980 to cover the first TV adaptation of the novel. Do what you can to find a copy and join us this Thursday for the first of our four-part podcast on the 1980 Shogun miniseries.
And finally, the latest first-run movie, The Fall Guy, features Emily Blunt and Ryan Gosling. He's a stuntman tasked with finding the star of his ex-girlfriend's movie when he suddenly goes missing. Is it a rom-com? Yes. Does that mean I'll automatically hate it? Not if the trailer lives up to its promise. Join us for the podcast on Bald Move Pulp this Thursday night.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
Captain on Bridge, welcome back to Baldly Go.
All right, Star Trek at baldmove.com. Esteban is up first. Fun fact, when I took Spanish in high school, did you take a foreign language, and did your teacher assign you a foreign language name?
Oh.
Because Spanish, they all, on the first day, we were assigned Spanish names. Mine was Esteban. I was Esteban for 2.5 years of high school Spanish.
Yeah, I took like one semester of Spanish, but I don't think I got a Spanish name. What the hell?
Did they rename you? Damn. Jim was already Espanol enough, apparently.
Guess so.
Jimito. Esteban says, as far as episode 7 goes, I binge watch all of the Lower Decks just to find out what the fuck the koala joke was about. I enjoyed the series, but sad to say, I must have missed a koala. Maybe it ran through too fast. Jim, can you please fill me in on the koala joke?
No, I don't remember the koala.
Really?
Koala?
Are they memeing about something's going to happen in the new series, the latest series? Like, it's not even released
maybe
yet?
Maybe it's set up. I mean, I just have a bad memory for this stuff, but I don't remember the koala. Sorry.
Episode 8 says, it's got to be the best episode of all of Star Trek. Maybe that's recency bias, but I loved it. Aaron, I give you full permission to call Mbinga the ghost. I've already taken that liberty, as you probably noticed.
Even better than Inner Light? Even
that's
better
what I'm
than...
saying. Like, consensus, the old series, best. City on the Edge of Tomorrow. Consensus, TNG, best. Inner Light. Consensus, DS9, best. In the Pale Moonlight. This could be it. This could be... It's only season 2, though. City on the Edge of Tomorrow is season 1 of Star Trek. So, like, I don't know. It's this show's not over yet, but, like, yeah. It's in the top 10 episodes of Star Trek if you just want to talk about quality.
Not quality? In terms of, like, I don't know what
fan
quality
favorites
is.
Or whatnot. What do you say?
Nothing.
You don't know what quality is?
No, I have no idea what quality is.
Quality. Well, that's when you grind them up and medium roast them, steep them in hot water. Karen says, regarding the musical episode, she referred to our podcast on the same as Sparring Baldly, so because we were at each other. Your podcast was fun. I do have to say, if your bar is the Book of Mormon or Hamilton, you know, those things take years of work and a lot of woodshedding. You're not just going to get that in a single episode of TV show. But I do
then
get
don't
it.
Make
I
it. Then don't make it. That's my response.
I surprise I was moved at times, though. It's seriously perfectly valid to say this is not my ep. Yeah, I mean, so here's how you square that circle. If you don't like musicals to the extent that you only like the very best musicals, that like once a decade there will get like a one that comes out and they're like, this is the must see, that's fine. But it's tough to judge, you know, a single episode against that. But I get it. Like, I was like, I don't like listening to all country music. I will listen to the best country music. And if I was listening to one of my favorite musical acts, like if Run the Jewels or something did like a country music album, I would probably want it to be in the 99th percentile, or I'd probably think it's shit. So
yeah, that's for sure. I mean, I think it's totally fair to judge any piece of media by the best example of that piece of media. I mean, the bar gets
really
set. The bar gets
so you
set
judge...
and then you have to judge it against what exists, right? I mean, that's just how it works. It's always going to be compared to other examples of the genre. So I don't know. I think it's totally fair to compare this to a Hamilton. Yes, they didn't have years to write and produce it, but if that's the case and you don't think you can do a good job, then just don't make it. Go, hey, that's something we'd like to do, but we don't have the ability to do it, so let's not do it.
Like I said, I don't know that they should go back and make another musical, because I think they did not, I don't think they killed it. I don't think this is like, you know, but you would have to be on that hand, like, because I think the risk of ruin and going into like a truly mediocre musical episode is higher than they want. There's so many other fun things they can do besides just running back a musical episode. But
sure.
I don't know. Now they got the subspace improbability field, though. It'd be kind of funny to see like a 1950s style black and white comedy. Episode of Strange New Worlds, or
sure,
like I'm trying to think of other genres they could run that through the improbability field to get something fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, something more.
Cheers. Everything's set in the port galley, and Pike is Sam, and Una's Diane, and
Cheers. Yeah,
who plays Woody Harrelson? That would probably be Sam yeah. Kirk, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure, I can see it.
Anyway, back to Karen. She says, Chapel, they're finally making her the character she should have been. On the old series, they introduced her as having given up her research career to join the Enterprise as a nurse. And they also introduce her missing fiancé, Roger Corby. Dun, dun, dun. Do you recognize that name?
Yeah, that's the guy she's doing the archaeological medicine.
He's the Louis
with.
Pasteur
mm-hmm.
of archaeomedicine.
Archaeological medicine, yeah.
That is a line uttered by Spock on the original series when they're talking about this episode.
Interesting.
So after he dies in that episode, she spends the rest of the series pining after Spock, and it's a mess. But I feel like Strange New Worlds is fixing this. I think that's one of their big missions. It does seem, if not a mission, a personal amusement that they like finding canonical problems in Star Trek and smoothing it over with this show.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe she'll realize she made a huge mistake, but by the time Spock is clamped down on human exploration, and you know he holds a grudge, but also I think she has backed way off since Boimler told her that she doesn't appear in his history, and she's not telling Spock about that, and he has become hurt about that all around. He just doesn't have the experience to handle it. Vulcans, they're introverted, hardened, oblivious bunch. I took Chapel as just wanting to kind of like not get too serious about anybody, and mm-hmm. Spock's conservative seriousness approach to the relationship has put her off more so than the Boimler thing.
Yeah, I guess it could be both things. You know, she started kind of like, I don't know if I want to get too tied down here. And then Boimler comes in and starts talking about the future.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, boy, now I really don't think I want any part of this.
That's what I'm saying. Like, imagine if you've got, you know, you're 3 months into the relationship. It's kind of going, it's not what I thought it would be. We got some weird disconnects and where, and then someone from the future just comes by and casually says, oh, you're actually not in this person's biography at all.
Uh-huh.
You'd probably be like, oh God, thank God I can get out. You wouldn't be. Yeah.
Yeah. The universe is telling me something, right?
I do wonder what she like, how do they fix the kind of cringy pining after Spock in the old series? That's where.
You can't really fix things that didn't work in the original, right?
Unless they kind of like, she's just like this contradictory character where she was like really ambitious and young and she was making her career, and then she settled down with, she like fell in love with the professor and settled down with him, but then he got killed and she's now a person who could have had that career, but it's passed her by and she's just trying to rekindle. I don't know. I'm very curious to see what it's like watching the old series with knowledge of this series in your head. Because it'd be neat that they could square that circle. Karen says, finally, I think the wedding of Sarek's son that Picard talks about in The Next Generation attending as a young man is that of a late life marriage between Spock and Chapel. I believe they'll finally work it out. Sure, she'll be in her 90s, but so what? They could have a good 20 years together. That's my headcanon, and I'm sticking to it.
All right. Sure.
Yeah, I like it. I am very curious. That's the Chapel's such a central character, and she's such a marginal character in the old series. I'm just like, yeah, how are they going to work that out? It'd be great if they could figure out something that would make it work. Page C, like Jim, I'm not a huge fan of musicals, and old ones definitely grate on my nerves, but I really enjoyed this one. It was fun, and as someone who supposedly hated it, Jim sure did seem like a lot of the parts as he went along in the recap.
I secretly loved it.
I think you if you're probably doing the time-tested technique of, I didn't like this episode, but I'm not going to bring the whole episode down by shitting over it in every single sentence of my review, so...
Oh, well, you also made some good points during the recap and review, so, you know, I'm open to being mistaken about certain scenes or just not getting them.
Right.
So, yeah. Overall, I was negative on the episode, but there are definitely parts in it to like. I'm not saying it was all trash.
Alan says, I'm so delighted that Jim hated this episode and made sure to note it wasn't inherently because it's a musical, because he likes some musicals as I do, but that this was just a bad musical. I agree completely, except I thought La'an was great. A couple others are passable. Otherwise, it's mostly a swing and a miss for me. I mean,
that makes it sound like I also didn't like La'an or Uhura, and that's not true. I thought both of them are good singers. One of them is, Uhura is saddled with some bad lyrics and some mediocre camera and effects work. Whereas La'an's whole thing I thought was pretty good. It had a nice hook that I could get into. The song was decent. She's a great singer.
Rolling around in the sheets with Kirk. That was cute. Yeah.
Yeah. That La'an stuff worked.
Michael says, I'm sure the hive mind has alerted to the importance of Dr. Corby. Another's we talked about that. Turns out he's the not so secret future fiance of one Nurse Chapel. Mm-hmm. Another is the identity of the officer sitting at the console next to Ortegas. She was called Mitchell. I wonder if she could be a gender bent Gary Mitchell from Where No Man Has Gone Before. Have you seen that episode? That's one of the more famous episodes. And this is where this guy who had unusually high like ESP, Esper and Psyker scores, they go to the edge of the universe or the galaxy, and he gets hit by this cosmic ray that amplifies all of his psychic powers, and his eyes turn silver and he's able to control the crew. Have you seen that?
It's not ringing super loud bells, so probably not.
The only thing is, like, Mitchell's wearing a command shirt, and I believe this helmsman is wearing a red... I don't know what the hell that is. That, like, engineering services, security, wearing a red shirt. But maybe they get promoted, maybe they get switched departments, I don't know. But it's... he was also a helmsman, even though he's a lieutenant commander. Lieutenant commander, helmsman of the Enterprise. I also thought it was funny because I started reading this guy's Wikipedia page, Gary Mitchell, and he claims in this episode that he set Kirk up with a cute little blonde lab technician who Kirk almost married. Clearly talking about Carol Marcus.
Oh, okay, sure.
Yeah, that's interesting. Todd says, the moment I saw the promos and even the promo art, I got a Once More with Feeling vibe from this episode. Do you recognize this reference?
Once More with Feeling?
Classic Buffy the Vampire episode.
I never really watched that show.
Yeah, I had a girlfriend make me watch the first half, like up through season, I think, 3 or 4 before we broke up. So it's a fine show. I didn't get this far, though. He said it was the season 6, episode 7. A musical episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. While Buffy was further along in its run than Strange New World is, I think they were in similar places audience development wise. Buffy had to create its audience from mostly nothing, whereas Strange New World obviously just has to not suck to inherit a starving fan base. Recently, I read an article where Anton Mount said that they were channeling Once More with Feeling in this episode. Why do I feel like I liked Once More with Feeling better than Subspace? two reasons, and they both align with Jim's observations. So you should like this, Jim. First, Once More Feeling had bigger numbers. Keeping it all on a starship limited what they could do. Even if they did bigger ensemble pieces, it would still just be Starfleet folks with Starfleet folks. Let's face it, one highlight was the Klingons breaking out into K-pop moves. Did we talk about how the Klingon general was the same actor that plays Heller?
I don't think we actually mentioned that in the episode.
It might have been something we came up in.
I didn't know it.
Yeah. So that's a cool little detail.
Maybe you clued me in on that during the episode. I can't remember.
Also, why are people saying that Klingons look like a K-pop band? Like, I think they just look like a boy band. Has it been so long since we had boy bands that people think the Koreans invented the concept?
Maybe. I mean, it has.
Because like everyone's like, but what about that screamed K-pop over just like it's a boy band? Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Maybe I don't watch enough K-pop.
I mean, K-pop's the rage right now. So
listen to enough K-pop. A different setting with more diverse options would have helped, but the real piece was missing was the finale. There was nothing poignant or opposing about it. You ended happy as a musical should, but Once More Feeling didn't do that. It took the happy musical ending and twisted it so it punched you in the gut. In this finale, you learned that Buffy's friends, in attempting to resurrect her, didn't save her, but instead had pulled her out of heaven. So now she's living in a version of hell because of them. The very apex of a fun, fighting, and victory, Joss Whedon, who has a lot of flaws as a storyteller, still managed to deliver a sucker punch that sticks with me today. Subspace didn't do that. It was fun, sweet, also forgettable, a missed opportunity to be more. I mean, it's... Yeah, I could see that. That's like no one got pulled out of heaven and put into hell.
Sending characters to hell doesn't strike me as very Star Trek, but I see what you're saying. Like it didn't emotionally resonate with you very much. So sure.
Yeah. But yeah, that's the thing. It's like, but they could. I don't know if they waited longer in the crew, they might have been able to do something that with like Pike and his tragic.
Oh yeah, yeah. I don't know if.
Demise.
That seems like a big swing. You know, you make the episode where Pike gets disfigured to be a musical. That seems like a dangerous thing to do.
Well, it's like it all, but it's a dark thing that they pull out at the end, I think. Anyway, yeah, I don't know. I will buy that Buffy did a better musical episode. I have no problem admitting that. Cincinnati Joe says, forgive me if it's been covered and you may know by now, but in episode 9 podcast, Aaron didn't know if Sam Kirk was in the old series. He was briefly. They found him dead on a world attacked by flying parasites. His corpse was played by William Shatner with a mustache pasted on. I looked at it. It is fucking hilarious. Right. Jim.
I gotta look this up.
William Shatner with like dead guy makeup. Rocking a Sam Kirk mustache. It's great. But that's why I didn't remember. He's in Operation Annihilate. That's when the little like stingrays are flying around and biting people on the back and taking over their brain.
Jesus.
Yeah, he's just like in a brief scene dead on the ground.
It's amazing. That's amazing.
So Sam
now
Kirk?
I get the mustache.
Sam Kirk, dark future, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
Josh says, I want to ruin Under the Cloak of War for everyone. Why can't they just keep soldiers in patterns in the transporter buffers as they are about to go into combat? When they beam back, they just get put back the way they were. Boom. Now go out there and keep fighting.
Yeah, there we go.
Let me do you one better.
Well, does your body have to be disintegrated into
I was
in
about
the transporter
to say,
buffer?
They do the Thomas Riker bullshit where they bounce that beam off of swamp gas and they make
there
two.
There you go. Yeah.
Every time you kill a Starfleet officer, they come back too.
Love it.
What are you going to do to that? Klingons that also have transporter technology. You know, it could be I wonder if it's like a rule of war where they just we're not going to, you know, because otherwise, you know, there's lots of things you can do in modern warfare that you're not supposed to.
True.
Gets you in trouble because it's considered inhumane or prolonging or whatever. I don't know. Todd has another problem with Cloak of War. He says it's an amazing episode. Put it right alongside the Deep Space Nine episode in the Pale Moonlight. We talked about that. But there's one glaring problem. Captain Picard is run through the heart with a Nausicaan dagger in some random dive bar, somehow managed to live the tale. We see here that Klingon Ra literally stabbed in sickbay, but somehow managed to succumb to his wounds. It's also
stabbed
not
by the doctor. Let's say the doctor is the one who killed him. I don't know that he wants to heal him.
Let's also not forget the Klingons have all sorts of redundant organ systems to help sustain them in combat. Are you telling me there's no way to save Ra when he's inches away from every state-of-the-art piece of medical equipment the Federation can conjure, that Mbinga and Chapel just let him bleed out, that no other medical staff notice him lying on the floor?
You know, I mean, it's... Look, all the equipment for some reason was malfunctioning that day. I don't know why, but like Medbay 2's virus, whatever it's got, must
have
spread.
These Medbays just are... You know? Yeah.
They're unreliable sometimes, and well, I guess a Klingon's got to die for it.
They're about as reliable as your average zip drive from 1996. They're just not really there as technology yet.
Yep.
It's deep cut for Gen Xers out there in the audience. Todd says, this does make the ending much darker, but for a second in the conference room post-mortem, I really thought they're going to reveal he's still alive, but somehow been framed with the dagger and set to rot in some prison as a result. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so the only problem is that Mbinga got away with it, because it seems like what you're saying is, yeah, how would this criminal ink? But I mean, I think it says something about the episode that I, who usually notice shit like this, had. Yeah, no. I mean, I definitely saw that they were leaving it a little mysterious and a little bit of open for interpretation, but they cast the spell well enough that I was not on the trail of this.
Yeah, it worked well emotionally, so I think you forgive some of it.
Bobby says, in the finale, the part that bugged me was they found Chapel alive in the saucer section almost immediately, but then they just launched the saucer into the planet. I'm surprised they weren't like, you know, maybe there's more survivors on the ship. I found one right away just by walking around, probably or more. Nah, just launch it.
Yep.
And that's a thing about tightening up. Like, this isn't a rewrite. This is like a 5-second episode of somebody or Tagus. Like, we just found a survivor. There could be more. And Una or Pike saying, we have got a war against the Gorn with no support from the Federation. We're making, you know, like, let's say there's all 200 crew. We're sacrificing them for 5,000 colonists. That's all they had to do.
That or be like, well, we can't do the scan from here. The interference is too great. But once Spock is over there, he can scan it. And so Spock can make that call when he gets over there, right?
But then you buy that Chapel's the only one in this whole fucking ship that survived. Like, why?
That's a long shot for sure. But at least it would cover over
it does feel like Spock went over there and is like, I've secured the hot blonde. Fuck everybody. Uh-huh. It's like, yeah, just like pull the ripcord.
I've secured my survivor, the one I care about.
Yeah, the one I have emotional involvement with, everybody else. Craig from the UK says, I would like to see, so in the hopes and the desires column, says, I would like to see Pike be a bit more assertive. He's a seasoned captain after all. After a strong debut in Disco, I think he's become a bit soft. I know his impending destiny is known to him, but you'd think it would give him a bit of a more of a galvanization to do more. I imagine this will go for a five. Okay, let's start there. I think they're trying to go with a Pike aware that he's dying and aware that his crew is going to have to soldier on without him, and he's allowing them to take more of a role in command decisions and going with their gut and whatnot. But like, I think they need to make that explicit. Like, he needs to have a conversation with somebody about it, because
probably Spock.
Yeah. Because it's one of those things where it's like distracting how deferential he is to some of his junior officers. And this is just headcanon I've made up. It might not even be true.
Well, you can kind of see it. You know, he's following some of the desires of his crew, right? Like, Ortegas wants to do the away mission and be a pilot there, and probably doesn't have real cause to, but he lets her, right?
Yeah, his command style, like you see even in the final couple episodes, like he sets his people up to succeed. Like, he pumps up Uhura and lets her know how important she is so she can see. Like, that seems to be more of the thing he's going to than rather the dynamic does everything captain himself. And I think it's a deliberate decision, like I said.
But they definitely, I'm with you, they need to make it a little more explicit next season.
Yeah. So Craig continues, I imagine this will go for a 5-season run, culminating in the old series crew at the helm at the last episode. So the question is, can and will it continue after that? Maybe there's some new stories of their own. Or how about this? In a 10-episode season, have 4 or 5 of the old stories retold to a 21st century audience. A soft reboot. From the first season of the old series, they could do Balance of Terror or Arena, for example. Maybe the Gorn that Kirk fights is like 200 years old, and that's why it's so slow. No need to retcon it. It just happens to be not as an impressive victory as it first appeared. In any case, I can't wait for season 3, whichever century it comes back. I love the old ass Borg theory.
Shriveled up.
That Kirk just ate. Like, this Gorn is on his last molt. He's gotten soft in the middle. His tail's fallen off. And he just barely can hang in there. I fucking love it. That makes so much sense.
Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah, that's good.
What's your appetite for them just refilming some classic Star Trek episodes with the new old crew? I don't know about 4 out of 5 episodes. That's a lot.
I'd say do it as like a stunt akin to the musical episode. I don't think I want that to be prominent in the season.
I
don't know. I mean, maybe once we get to like a season 5 and it's like, okay, we've told all these stories before this era, now let's go back through some of the highlights of TOS and do those for one season and get out. Maybe a whole season kind of at the end to book in this thing, or, you know, to cap off this thing. That I think might be cool.
I'd like to see, I think it'd be maybe more fun instead of like gilding the lily with some of the best episodes, is like take some of those really shitty season 3 episodes, like Spock's Brain. Can you make Spock's Brain good with this crew? I don't know. But I also don't think we're making it 5 years with Pike. In fact, if I could predict, I would think next season Pike is going to be crippled and Kirk is going to take over.
It's feeling like they're moving through that stuff pretty fast with the uniting of the crew members. Like, getting Scotty in there was kind of the crazy thing. I was like, what? They're doing it this quick with the Spock Kirk introduction and then Scotty back to back? Okay.
And fucking Kirk is essentially getting his mail on the Enterprise now as often as he shows up. So like, it does feel
quarters
like
on the Enterprise, basically.
Yeah. And I think that would be interesting because, like, there's the idea, and this is why I need to rewatch the old series to see exactly how this connects. But, like, the idea that, like, Kirk finishes out a 5-year run. So you get you get 3 seasons or so of Pike and then a season and a half of Kirk. And then that's the end of that 5-year run.
Mm-hmm.
And then the old series essentially starts the next 5-year run. So you've got a little bit of room to tell some of the stories of that transition period.
Yeah, I think there's definitely room for it. And you can kind of retcon a lot of the weirder stuff, you know, like we've been talking about with Chapel and that stuff.
Because, like, I don't know that I want to see Strange New Worlds forever. I would like for them to do 5 to 7 seasons of it. And then what I'd really like to see them do is something set in the 24th fucking century that is like Strange New Worlds, where it's more about exploration, more about cooperation, more about technology and weird planets and alien civilizations, and not so much about the fucking Federation's got a black ops, it's gone wrong, and it's killed. Yeah, like,
I would really love to see the era where, like, the robot wars stuff happened, but not in the style of Picard, because that Picard stuff was shitty. I think the core of it could have been really cool if it was written better.
Yeah.
But yeah, that, like, 24th, 25th century kind of cusp where, you know, they're fighting against the AI that's trying to take over. That could be really cool. Like, in a Deep Space Nine kind of way, but I don't know. We'll see.
Red alert. Here comes an ad break. Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more.
However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if Very Special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd. We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in the club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk podcast, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today. Let's boldly go back to the episode. Welcome back to Baldly Go. Let's see. Leah's next. She says, "Hey guys, really loving the Strange New Worlds coverage. I'm a huge musical theater person, and I love what they did the musical episode. I love that they're having so much fun with it, and I completely agree with Aaron's rules of third. I do think that a lot of songs this episode were a bit weak, and I was slightly disappointed at that. Maybe the musicals they're in conversation with are just older than I like the Gilbert Sullivan era that Una's into. But there's so much amazing development in modern musical theater. You could have really killed it in the songs of the style of Rent, Hamilton, Spring Awakening, even something as old as Grease. But it wouldn't be the first time Star Trek completely ignored the existence of modern music in favor of less relatable classics. Say it ain't so. They never done that, Leah. In the style of Rent, every time I think of something in the style of Rent, my mind goes to Team America World Police and everyone's got AIDS. How would you? Sure. Everyone's infected with gore and eggs. See, done.
Yep. You just wrote a better musical episode. Perfect.
I did absolutely love the first number, the credits, and both La'an and Una solos. I actually thought the scene of Uhura alone in whatever part of the ship she was in was breathtaking and brought tears to my eyes. Thank you.
Wow.
Thank you.
Okay.
I like the simple arrangement. I'd love to hear an apology for your comments during the Lower Decks crossover episode podcast along the lines of whose favorite character is Uhura? She's so inspiring to so many people and women of color, and I really love that they're giving her a full backstory and arc of personal growth, and this show sell well-deserved. We see her go from the awkward young adult stage of not knowing where she fits and what she wants to do to fully owning who she is, trauma and all, and what her strengths are and coming into her own. And I thought that song played put a cap on her transformation. She walked out of a confident character that we know that she becomes. I agree. I think that her whole arc pivoted there from essentially Cadet Uhura to the Uhura we know and love. Go ahead. Yeah.
You can have your apology. I think, yeah, she was inspiration. I'm in my mind, Nichelle Nichols is the thing that inspired so many people. It wasn't necessarily the character of Uhura, but it was her place in history. And it's a weird distinction to make. I agree. So
yeah, so that's
apology that's given. Hopefully, apology received.
I don't know if I'm gonna fucking double down.
Oh Jesus.
Because I thought I articulated that, but that's precisely the meta thing that trips me up. It's undeniable how iconic and inspirational Uhura was, not just to little boys and girls growing up in the 1960s, but like literal astronauts have said, mm-hmm. you know, I was mm-hmm. a black girl growing up and whatever, and I saw this other black woman on the starship of, and I thought that's something I could fucking do. And here I am on the shuttle Enterprise or whatever, then I'm doing it. That's very cool. I don't understand why a black woman in the 24th century would see her as a giant role model. And that's where the meta breaks down, because like we have to be something like 300 years post-racial tensions at that time. Mm-hmm. So like it's a weird, like it brings me back to like, oh, this show was written in 2023 or 1965 or whatever, instead of like this is a contemporary 23rd, 24th century kind of thing. That's the only thing. It's not that I'm like, okay. Oh yeah, Uhura, fuck Uhura. It's like, why? What's the name of the Boimler's friend on the name like Traveler, something like that?
I don't remember her name.
Speedster, Thrust.
Mariner.
Thank you. Something involving travel. It didn't make sense like why they would. Just like I don't understand why Boimler worships the number one, Una. Like
mm-hmm.
yeah. Like these women are breaking barriers in 1960s television, not in 2352 Starfleet is what I get at. But I don't know. Maybe
Sure.
Maybe I explained it poorly, or maybe it's still an asshole opinion. I don't know. What else? She goes, I also felt like that just connected every single character beat we've seen from Uhura with a through line that wasn't there before, even with her literally connecting Spock and Kirk. P.S. I've been listening to the soundtrack on repeat all week, so I now actually love it. I take back being slightly disappointed. I think Connect to Your Truth is the only skippable one, and the rest are total earworms. The Uhura kind, not the TNG Admiral kind. Course I
and not the SETI Alpha 5 kind.
I gotta say that technically those were neck worms. You're talking about the CD Alpha 5 earworms, but easy mistake to make. I agree with you. I used to not kind of be lukewarm on Chapel's song, but yeah, Connect to Your Truth, and it's fine. It's like it's very Gilbert and Sullivan, but I don't know. It seems like Una's kind of like a little stodgier that way, too. We got two more. Alan's up. Penultimate email. I love the episode, but you're absolutely right to note some wonky physics and just generally argue that getting the details right would only help the show. Traditionally, the biggest Star Trek fans have been engineers and literal rocket scientists. Shouldn't that intensely loyal audience get paid some respect? I guess they could also figure they'd get those viewers regardless, so they can take them for granted, which is sad, but as Spock might note, possibly logical. Ding, ding, ding. I think you uncovered something there.
It doesn't cost you anything. Like, the viewers aren't going to tune out because you're internally consistent with the physics we understand. I mean...
Well, I tell you what, the show that they're making for their rocket scientists and engineers is For All Mankind.
Very
and
true.
And I don't know how many people are watching the show, but I know nobody's listened to the podcast on that show. So maybe there's just not that many rocket scientists to cater to.
Surprise, surprise. Yeah.
Yeah. You probably already got a million people pointing this out to you, but just in case, Mbinga cannot die, as he was featured on, I believe, 2 episodes of the old series.
Wow.
So, okay. So I didn't realize, I thought he was just in the menagerie. Or the Pike they redid the pilot to be part of the Star Trek. I thought he was just in that, but apparently he was in a scene where he interacts with McCoy. So he's got the prequel plot armor for sure. The list of characters with prequel armor now includes Spock, Uhura, Chapel, Mbinga, Jim Kirk, and Scotty. Plus, Sam Kirk can only die in one specifically preordained way.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Pike can only be maimed in a very specific manner. So really, you've only got Una, La'an, Pelia, and Ortegas who could potentially die in any given scenario on the show. All right, that's our objective. We have to kill all 5 of these women over the next however many seasons.
Are they all women? And Mitchell. Let's throw Mitchell in there, too.
Well, so that's they wrote themselves in a corner because, like, in the pilot episode of Star Trek, the old series, Christopher Pike makes this crack about a new female officer he's got, and he's like, I'm not so comfortable with all these women on my bridge. And then Una course is there, and he goes, well, except for you, Officer Chin Riley, you're like you're one of the boys. And
Jesus,
to overcorrect, well, not to overcorrect, to correct from that, one of the things you'll note is, unless it's Spock, every fucking bridge officer on Enterprise is a woman. So like,
Yeah.
Pike is, and that's the thing, that's where the meta gets it, like, because I don't know why Pike is so fucking sexist in the mid 23rd century, but he is. So maybe there are some, like, maybe Uhura did have to overcome some just old fashioned, very old fashioned racism in Star Trek, the original series. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to totally flip flop here in the next couple of years, right? Because Uhura will be like the only woman on the bridge.
Yeah, because Kirk just don't. He likes the ladies, but not in that capacity.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, I don't know. It's fraught. It's fraught when you try to fix the metaphysical problems with shit made in the 60s. But I like that they're doing it. Sadie, final, is the ultimate feedback. Says, after the finale, I was really itching for some more Star Trek content. Decided to check out the 3 Pike episodes from the original series. I've been watching chunks of the old series in reruns as a kid, but I haven't seen the entire series. It's pretty fun and thought-provoking, and it gave me an idea for some strike fielder content if it keeps on. Interesting, Sadie. Perhaps you could do a short pod series covering episodes from the original series that feature the Strange New Worlds characters. I've provided you a helpful guide below.
Wait, so if it's you want all to do... of them. Captain Kirk is in.
Well, they're saying only the Strange New World characters. So if you want to do Una and Pike, you got the Menagerie Part 1 and 2.
Yeah,
if you want to do... Go ahead.
James T. Kirk is a Strange New Worlds character. Are you talking about the bridge crew from the Enterprise in Strange New Worlds? Is that what you mean? Because Spock is in, basically.
So her final paragraph says, I don't think you need to do a special one from James Kirk or Spock, and I guess now Scotty too, okay. Since they would be covered in the other characters' episodes. But she's talking about the ones that only really get a showcase on Strange New Worlds.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Una and Pike, The Menagerie Part 1 and 2. Mbinga was featured in A Private Little War and That Which Survives. Sam Kirk was in Operation Annihilate, as we mentioned, and he only is dead. He just shows up dead. T'Pring, of course, the classic Amok Time. Nurse Chapel's in lots of episodes, but maybe the naked truth for her interactions with Spock. Uhura, again, is in lots of episodes, but a quick search suggests Mirror Mirror would be a good one. La'an is not in the old series, but you could also work in the Khan episode Space Seed. I might be missing some characters, but I don't think you'd need to do one for James Kirk or Spock, or I guess now Scotty too, since, you know, we already talked about, I guess, Pelia, but I don't think she was in, because you got others that are only in Strange New Worlds and they won't ever be in another one, like La'an. But I don't know, like, that's a middle ground between doing a full series rewatch and something fun between the next two series. I know we want to do something in this feed. It's all about we have limited time and soon to be limited television. What's the best use of that time? You know, what's going to make the most amount of our fans happy? Is it too much to wish to attract maybe a new fan base, which I think maybe we're getting a little bit with Star Trek, because it seems like it's like a larger pool of fans and communities that we haven't done a lot with. And, you know, with Picard and now this, we're starting to get mentioned. So I don't know. I like the idea, though. I would like to do something with the Star Trek feed, especially if the strike continues. So that's all we got. StarTrekAtBaldMove.com is how you get in touch with us. Again, if you want to know what we're up to, if you want to see if we're doing any upcoming Star Trek series or if we're going to do a revisit, social media, any at BaldMove is fine, except for TikTok, at BaldestMove. And then if you like what we're doing here, if you want to join the crew and get the following Starfleet benefits, such as ad-free feeds and extra bonus audio and video content, I got the deal for you. Support.baldmove.com, join the club and get all these and more, and keep us podcasting. 50% of our revenue derives directly from fan support, and we literally couldn't do it without it. So thank you for everyone who supports us, and if you haven't, consider it. Support.baldmove.com. That's it officially for Strange New World season 2. We are closing the book on it. We'll definitely be back for season 3, and stay tuned for any Star Trek action in between. Until then, we're signing off. We're closing Halo Frequencies. We're beaming up. We're entering warp. Until the next time, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Lieutenant Commander Helmsman Jim.
I want this season to end now.